Okay, we started with two dots in the bottom of Kuf Yud Ches Amud Bet. The Mishnah speaking about what you're allowed to purchase, right, and not allowed to purchase from certain individuals. And then the Gemara went through a cycle about Roim. In that cycle about Roim, we pointed out that one is permitted to purchase 4 or 5 animals from a Roeh, because that is an obvious either amount of animals that would be missing from the Eder, or something that he can't make a claim, oh, it was taken by a fox, came and chewed up one of them. If he gives it 4 or 5, that's already a significant amount. But we also said that you can't do Shteitzon, that's too little, that's too few. Yehuda qualified that statement and says that's true of Baitos, but not of Mitbariot. That's true of the things close to the house, the domesticated ones, versus the Mitbariot, the ones that are Roeh out in the desert. So the Gemara wants to know about the statement of Yehuda. And the Mishnah has two parts. One part is what permits you. You're allowed to buy 4 or 5. The other part which says you're not allowed to buy 2. So is it a resha koi? Is it on the resha, which means that when you can purchase 4 or 5 animals, then Rabbi Huda comes along with Chumra and he says, Amar, Luchimen, Arba V'chamisha. Tanakh Amos says you're allowed to buy 4 or 5 animals, so that's significant. So Rabbi Yehuda qualifies that and says that's only true when they're close to the yeshuv, when they're close to the house. So there the Baal HaBayit will notice them. Aval Midbariot, if they're out in the Midbar, Roeh in the Midbar, Afil Arba Chamisha Lo, even 4 or 5 he can't, because that, he doesn't, is in with some leif. He's not around to see them, he doesn't really focus on it, and therefore he won't notice even 4 or 5. Well, Dilma Seifakai, maybe he's going on the second half of the Tanakhama statement, which is, what a Lukula, and that'll be a Kula, what Amar, Baal Lo Shteitzon. The Tanakhama says you're not allowed to buy 2 from him, because that's not significant enough, that's not noticeable enough. That is when you're out of the yeshuv, out in the midbar, you're there. Aval baitov, if they're close to the yeshuv, and if it's something that Baal HaBayit is metapel or involved with on a daily basis, you can even buy 2, because he will notice that, since he's always there and he always notices and he's around his flock, he'll notice 2 is a significant number too. Tanya, the Gemara says, "Tashnah." The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda omer lochim baitos mehem bein lochim mitbariot. Allowed to buy those in the close proximity to the house, or those that are domesticated versus the mitbariot, those that are out in the desert grazing. B'chol makom lochim mehen arba v'chamisha. No matter where you can buy from them, 4 or 5 don't. Midamar b'chol makom. In fact, he says anywhere you can buy 4 or 5. Shmami no atseifa kai. It's clear that she's talking about the seifa. Because he's saying that no matter where you buy 4 or 5, then it doesn't matter. Midbar, Baitos, you're good. So then what was he saying? The distinction between Midbariot and Baitos must be about 2. So when you buy 2, the Tanakhama says you're not allowed to buy 2. It's 2. It's not a significant amount of number. Yehuda comes along and says, no, that's true when the animals are far away. And he's not focused on them. So when he sees them on an occasional basis, and he's only involved with them on an occasional basis, then he needs 4 or 5 to be significant. He needs more than 2 to be significant. But when it's close to home, when it's proximate and he sees the animals all the time, even 2 will be something that's noticeable to him. Shmamina, safe guy the kula, shmamina. That's the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Right now, the Mishnah has continued that you're not allowed to buy from Shomrei Peirot Yitzim, but Shomrei Peirot. You can't buy from people who are guarding fruit trees and fruit, because they don't have any underlying ownership in the fruits or the fruit trees. So if they're selling you fruit, when they're watching these items, we assume that they've stolen them from the people that they are watching for. So Rav, Zavin, Shavishta, Miarisa. So first of all, whether the Girsa here is there's a number of Girsos, whether it's Rav, it's Rava, possibly, and then the Rif has a possibility of Girsa Rabba, but not Rav, because he's the Baal Pukta of Abaye, and we're going to see that Abaye is involved over here. It says, Rav Zavin Shavishta Me'arisa. He bought, right, Chavilei Zmurot. He bought that small shoots or branches that were tied up. He bought them from a Arisa. Arisa is a sharecropper. Amalei Abaye. So Abaye spoke to him. So that's why this makes so much sense that it's Rav. It makes more sense that it's either Rav or Rav, because then Abaye would be, makes sense that Abaye was saying something to them. So Abaye about Nan Mishomrei Peirot Itim Uperot. Right, that you're not allowed to buy from those that are watching fruit trees and fruit. That's true of Shomer. Why? The late Levi Gufa the Aro. He doesn't own anything of the land. I mean, he has no ownership inside of the Perot that he's watching. about Aris, when it comes to a sharecropper, that he does have a portion, meaning that he has joint ownership of the production of the field. Let's say that he bought it of his own, that he's using his own. Yeah, it's his own produce that he's selling to you. So Tana Rabbanan, Shomrei Peirot, Lochim Mehem, Kashen Yoshvim, Omochrin. You can buy from people who are watching fruits when they're sitting and selling, but selling Lishnehem, and they have huge baskets of fruit out in front of them, or Tortani Lishnehem, and they have a big scale over there. Because even though technically Shomer Peirot, the distinction that Rabba just made, was that if the person has no share in the produce that they're watching, can't buy from them because the assumption is that they stole it. On the other hand, if they have some sort of share in the produce, we assume that they're selling theirs and not the Baal Habayit. They didn't steal it. Now here, even if you are buying from someone who does not have ownership in the fruits, but if he's selling them in a manner that is so obvious and so public, then we can assume that he's not selling hot items or stolen merchandise, because people who sell stolen merchandise try to cover it up, don't do it. He's sitting in front of the owner's field, selling buckets of fruit. It's obvious that the owner's going to know if he's stealing his fruit and selling it out. Doesn't make sense. So that's what the Brisa says. Shamei priyot uchimen shniyashirin umachrin betzalin lefneim betzadani lefneim. Ugulan shamru hatmein atzur. So that's clear. If they tell you, listen, don't tell anybody you bought from me, keep this undercover, it's clear that somebody's selling you a hot item, because there's no reason to have to cover up these types of things unless they are stolen. Again, if you're going to buy from them, you have to buy from the front door, not from the back door. And again, these are...
Is this something else, a new statement?
It looks like an independent statement that you have to buy. If you're going to buy from them, make sure it's in the front of the gina, not the back of the gina. Although, before, we said that you can't, our Mishnah says you can't buy from Shomrei Peirot, number one. The Braisa says you can buy from them when they're selling it, obviously, in a public manner. So I don't know if this and that statement is qualifying. Selling in a public manner must be petach hagina and not machori hagina. But I think it's another qualification, at least, or something where I think less about the petach hagina, but more about the machori hagina. If they're selling in the back door, that's equivalent to someone saying to you, I'll keep this undercover, keep this under wraps.
But after selling it near the gina, the assumption is that the fruit is from whatever it is.
It's out from the gina. Right, so I'm saying the back door is a problem, but the front door, again, maybe a public venue, a public enough venue where it's okay. Itmar, gazlan meimat mutar tiknos kemenu. When can you buy from a gazlan? You know somebody is a thief. When are you allowed to buy from a thief and not have to assume that he doesn't, that it's not hot items, it's a problem of stolen goods? Rav Amar Chitei Rov Mishalo. Rav says that you can transact with him when you know that the majority of what he owns is really his own. And only a minority of what he contains or is in his house or in his estate is from stolen items, then you can buy from him. Shmuel Amar, afilu mi'uchilo. Shmuel says, even the smallest amount, as long as there's some part that we can assign or we can assume, that it can be told us that whatever you're buying or you're transacting with is with this mi'ut. So I think in this instance, according to Shmuel, if you're buying in excess of what you think he has on his own, that would be problematic, because we can be tabuyas on the mi'ut. But that's assuming that you're not buying an excess of this meal. Right? So that, I think, would be a qualification. It's just interesting to note that in general, when it comes to Dinei Mamonos, Rav says, Olchim Achar Rov by Mamon. Right? Where Shmuel does say, they don't Olchim Achar Rov by Mamon. Now, it's not exactly the same. It's clearly not the same concept. But it's just interesting that Rav, who says, Olchim Achar Rov by Mamon, demands a Rov over here in order to transact with the Gazlan. And Shmuel says that we don't focus in the robe by Mamon, says over here that a meal is sufficient to allow you to purchase from a gazlan. Alright, now, what about Mamon? Oh wait, I'm sorry. Orile Rav Yehuda la Ada Daila. Yehuda instructed or paskin for Ada Daila. Ada is his name. Daila, so it's someone who's Meshamesh Lifnei Chachamim. Right, that's what Rashi says, right? Meshamesh Lifnei Chachamim. Kedivrei HaOmer Afilu Miyachelo. Passing like Shmuel, that even if it's a mute by the Gazlan, you can transact with him, you can be involved with him. Now Mamon Masur. So the money or the property of a Masur, which is someone who is Moser, a Malshin, who is Moser, the Mamon Yisrael, to an Anas. Right, the previous mission that we had. Someone who points out or gives over the money of other Jews, right, to the Anasim. So what did we know from before? We'll see this in a second, right? We know from before that his gufo is nifkar, that you're allowed to kill him. We know that from the story of Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana killed the guy who wanted to show Melchave, right, the property of some other Jews. They ended up killing him. So the Gemara wants to know, what about his property? So Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, Rav Machlokas, Chadamar Mutar Labdo, Biyad, you're allowed to destroy his property. Chadamar Asur Labdo Biyad. Madamar Mutar Labdo Biyad, Lo Yehim Mamono Chamor Migufo. One says you can destroy his property, act of loose, because if you can kill him, it certainly can take his money. Why should his money be any better or any more protected than his goof? Say that his goof's at risk, so too with his money. Mandamar Asur Labdo, the one says that it's Asur, Dilma Havalei Zara Ma'alya. Maybe you never know what's going to happen after him. You never know what's going to happen with his children. Since you don't know what's going to happen with his children, that money might end up with his children. His gufo, fine. That has nothing to do with children. But at least mono might end up in a good place in the end. So it's a very good place in the end. Then you should leave his money alone. Steve. And the pasuk says in the Yov, I'll tell you what the pasuk says, Yachin v'tzadik yobash. That you'll prepare and the tzadik will wear it. Right? Yachin. Now, the Gemara is darshaning on that Yachin is Yachin Rasha. So they added in the word. That's not in the Pasuk, but the word Rasha is the Rasha of the Gemara, that Yachin Rasha, the Rasha will prepare, and Tzadik Yobash. Right? And the Tzadik will wear it. But the basic idea is that the Rasha will make all these efforts, he'll gather the wealth, and he'll have certain things happen. In the end, it'll end up with the Tzadik. So it's over here, this individual who is not, he's a masur, he's somebody who's musar, mamonim, and his goof's at risk, but nevertheless, we say by his mamon, leave it, because there's a chance that the, he might end up in a good place and doing good things. Alright, so here in Arisa, Rashi gives two interpretations, that either used to be very exacting about what he gave to Rav Chista, meaning that he used to weigh it and keep his own, and weigh it and give it to Rav. That's one interpretation. Second interpretation Rashi brings down is that he used to take chetzi chetzi. Right? Meaning that he used to weigh his, and then weigh Rav and give chetzi chetzi. Generally, Arisin are only get a third of the crop, four quarter or third. This guy was taking a half. Right? He was taking more. So the Marsha points out the problem with both these interpretations of Rashi, which is going to see in a second. First of all, if he measured it and he was exacting on it, what's wrong with that? That's what he's entitled to. If they made a deal for 50-50, why can't he measure out what he gets? What's wrong with that? Right, so why not? Right, so that's the second interpretation of Rashi, which says, like you're saying, that, wait a minute, that he didn't deal with, usually they got a third and he's taking a half. Well, if they did agree to a half, then what's the claim of a pizza? If they didn't agree to a half, then what's he doing? Taking a half. Right, so that's the Moshua suggests over here, we'll see in a second, that he had Evan v'Evan. What's Evan v'Evan? That he, when he was weighing out the stuff, he had different counterweights. One weight for when he measured for himself, and one weight for where he measured for Rav Chista. That makes sense. We'll see the next line. So he says, "Kara nafshe." So then, okay, he fired him. Rav Chista said, "You're out of here," and he fired him. So again, the problem is, if he was going to din, what right did Rav Chista have to fire him and get rid of him? On the other hand, if he was cheating him, then he could be okay, then to remove him is not an issue. So Kara Nafshay, so Rav Chista said about himself, V'tafun v'tzadik chel chutet, is hidden, or left over for the tzadik, is the chel, the wealth of the chutet, the one who sins. So he said about the tzaris. Tzaris did all this work, and he was cheating Rav Chista. Rav Chista fires him, and he keeps his portion plus the portion of the aris. I mean, that's the chel chutet, the wealth of the sinner, reverts back to the tzaddik, and who's the tzaddik here is Rav Chista, and the sharecropper was the chutzpah.
Right, even if you fire him, so if he's entitled to something, so you have to give it to him.
But if he was cheating you, then he abrogated the deal. And that's in general, if you violate the law of the contract or the stipulations between you,
so, okay, so
then
you're on. If he wasn't entitled 55%, he's entitled 50%.
No, but you have no idea. Head in the oven.
Yes, you have no idea how much he took along the way here. Yeah. It's not impossible. Oh, here. Kima tikvat chanif. What is the hope for either the hypocrite or the mechanef, the one who doesn't act appropriately? Kivta, when he makes profits, when he gains. Ki yashel nafsho. When Hashem will cast away his nefesh. Rav Huna, Rav Chista argue about what this pasuk means. Chanamar nafsho din exal. That what it means that he casts away the nefesh of the nigzal, the one who was stolen from. So matik vat chanef ki yibza. Right, what is the hope for the one who's stealing or making profits? Ki yishel aluka nafsho. When Hashem throws away the nefesh, what does it mean? The nefesh, shah nigzal. Chanamar nafsho shel gazlan. When Hashem throws away the nefesh of the gazlan. So now mandamar nafsho shel nigzal. That's talking about the one who's stolen from the achtiv. Kem orchot. This is the way of all those that steal, right, that are profiting from others inappropriately. Nefesh be'alav yikach. They will also take, or they are taking away, the soul of those that are the owners. And when you steal from them, that you're also stealing their nefesh. So because of that, that means when you, therefore, right, Ishel aluka nafsho, meaning that the Tishel, that when they are, nefesh is taken away by God, meaning that when they steal from them, then they're left with nothing. Their nefesh is taken away. On the other hand, the one who said that it's something about the gazlan, one of them nafsho shel gazlan, nefsiv al tigzal dal, ki dalu, in the way Rashi interprets it, don't steal from a poor person just because he's poor. V'hat tzedake ani bashar, do not oppress an ani, a poor person, bashar. Rashi, the simple interpretation of the pasuk is Bishar Shel Din. It means when he's in judgment, don't oppress him. Rashi says here it means the Shar, things that are given at the Shar. What are things that are given at the Shar? Is Maser Ani, Leket Shichon Teyah, that were given away at the Shar. So don't oppress the Ani, Bashar. Don't withhold from him the Matnos Aniim. The issue of the Ani Bashar. The other possibility is Bashar, which is generally used in the Gemara to mean the market price. So Adakaya Ani, do not oppress the Ani with the market price. Do not overcharge him for the items. Ki Hashem Yarib Rivam, Hashem will fight on their behalf. Vikala et Kobehem Nefesh. And he will take that, remove the Nefesh of those that steal from them. Right, or those that steal from them. So over here you see that whose nefesh is going to be taken away? That of the gazlan. So v'idach na'ami aktiv nefesh be'alav yikach. Well look, the other one has the pasuk that says nefesh be'alav yikach. When you steal from someone, not only are you taking their money, but you're also taking their, right, their nefesh. So my ba'alav, ba'alav dahashta. That's the new owner's nefesh over here. Right, exactly. So that is talking about the gazlan. Right, so just like the Orchot Kol Batei Abasa, Nefesh Balav Yikach, the new owners will lose their Nefesh. So that's how he explains that it's speaking about the Gazlan. V'idach Nami Sivu V'Kavet Koveyem Nefesh. Right, so the other Pasuk which says that Hashem will take retribution from their Nefesh. So he says, no, not that he will take retribution from the Nefesh of the Gazlan, but rather Matam Kamar. Matam V'Kavet Koveyem. Why will Hashem take retribution from those that steal? Mishum the Kavai Nefesh. Because they stole the nefesh. They stole the nefesh of the nigzal. Right? They stole the nefesh of the nigzal, therefore Hashem could have come after them. And that's how they interpret the pasuk before, that who loses their nefesh is the one of the nigzal. Because when you take away all his property, he has nothing left. So then it's like stealing or taking away his nefesh. Rabbi Yochanan, kol gazel chavero shaveh puta. Anybody steal from a friend, a shaveh puta, kilo notel nishmatom b'men. As if he stole his nefesh, neshama from him. Shneimar kein ochot kubete abate nefesh balav yikach. See what the pasuk we just had. Ve'omer, we have an additional pasuk. V'achal kirtzurcha v'lachmecha. You will eat your harvest, and they will eat, your enemy will eat your harvest and your food. Ganecho b'notecha, your children as well. So we're not to interpret that they will. The simple interpretation of the pasuk is that they will take everything. They will take your katir, your lachmecha, and your children. The way we're learning the pasuk now is v'achal kirtzurcha v'lachmecha. And therefore, they will also take banechum notecha. Why? Because you have nothing to feed to your children. Since they've taken off your property, right then, banechum notecha. Yochlu banechum notecha. So, but again, that's the simple interpretation of the pasuk, is that they will take everything from you. But the way they're interpreting now, they're parsing the pasuk to say, achal tzitzikav lachmecha, and then banechum notecha will be automatically gone. Omer, mechumat bnei Yudah. Right, from the that which was stolen by right, from Bnei Yehudah, and from by Bnei Yehudah, Shashafchu Dam Naki, that they spilled the innocent blood by Artam. So again, the interpretation here is Mechamaz Bnei Yehudah, because of the Chamaz Bnei Yehudah, therefore there was Shafach Nam Daki by Artam. Why? Because that which was stolen, those had not saved nothing left, and then the Shemot and Nefesh was taken, therefore it was Shafachu Dam Naki by Artam. Vomer also says, Shaul ve'beit ha'damim asher mit et ha'givonim. Also it says, Shaul ve'beit ha'damim, his house of blood, that killed the givonim. So we'll see what it means in a second, and why I can explain this. My vomer, why did you bring all these additional psukim? V'cheitem ha'nefesh didei, when it says, in the first part of which I had kobotei bata nefesh bala vitak, only the owners, right, then you would say, just his nefesh you take away when you steal from him. Aval nefesh panav v'notav, lo, but his children know, tashma, basar panav v'notav, right, that he also takes the children's lives as well. V'chitei ma'ani milay kadolo yam dami. Right, that's what it's made, that's when he doesn't give money for it. Aval echadiyoy v'mei, when he gives over money, where he pays for the item chamas, right, when chamas, chamas is where you take and you pay, right. So even though the person didn't want to sell it, you coerce or you force him to sell it to you for the money. If I would take in that case, lo tashma mi chamas bnei Yehudah shashafchu dam naki bar dam. So you see that even with chamas it's called dam naki, that you spilled dam naki. Chetei ma'ayim yechad heichad avad biyadayim. That you only did it actively, you stole biyadayim. But about garam alo, but if you causation, and you caused the loss to an individual, then you would be okay. There's nowhere in Navid that it says that Shaul ever killed the Givonim. So why does the Pasuk say that he killed the Givonim? Because he killed Ibn Arakim, you must be Kimaim, my Mazon, who used to supply food and water. Now that doesn't seem like the Kwanim themselves, but rather to the Mikdash, right? The Nishkan, or the Mikdash. And therefore, since he took away their livelihood, and since he took away their ability to sustain themselves, it was Kilu Hurgan. So here you see Davar Grama. Because he didn't literally take away or steal from them, he just stole away. He killed all the Kohanim, which left them with no Parnasa. Abulukhim and Anashim, you're allowed to buy from women. Talking about Lukhim and Anashim, Kli Samar B'Yuda, allowed to buy woolen items from them in Yuda, Ukli Bishtam B'Galil. Linen items from the women in the Galil, avalo yenot, ushmanim, the siltot. Now let it buy from them wine, oil, and flour. So again, it seems to be, these are areas, these women in those areas, Yehuda, Galil, we also saw what seems to be in the Sharon, that this was their, what their husbands allowed them to be asukin, or that's what they were asukin, and therefore the husbands gave them materials to work with, so it wasn't considered to be stolen. Lo min avadim, v'lo min atzinokot. You also cannot buy these things from the avadim and children. V'shol omer, mocher tishar ba'arba v'chamisha dinar, kedei lasot kipa l'rusha. That a woman can sell small time items, the rates for her dinar, in order to make kipa l'rusha, because in general we will assume that a husband is mochel, because that is something that a woman needs, the kipa l'rusha, and therefore a husband is not makpid on that level. Kulan shamru, atmin asur. Again, this is the qualification, if they tell you to Sha-sha-sha, or hide this, you know that it's a sur. Gabay tzaka, this is interesting, gabay tzaka lo chimen devar mu'at. That is small items. You're allowed to take small items from them, below devar meruba, but not large items from them. With the assume that in that area there's mechila, right? So if adim, ketanim, nashim, who are involved in these things, we assume that if they're giving you small items to tzaka, that's fine. If they're giving away large items, then we got a question whether they have permission to do such a thing. Ve'abadidim. The Badadim are those people that run the Beit Abad, they run the olive presses. Lochimen zeitim bimidah. They can take zeitim bimidah, v'shemen bimidah, below zeitim bimu'at, v'shemen bimu'at. You can take large quantities, that's what it seems to be. Take large quantities of zeitim or shemen from them, but you cannot, the other side of that would be, you can't take small quantities from them.
From the
wives. Why? Because large quantities, it's clear that the husband's going to know about it. And it's the fact that she's showing up with these, it's called a commercial size, quantities of shemen and zeitim, it's clear that the husband either knows about it or gave her permission, because otherwise she can't get away with hauling off all the harvest of the olives. And then if she shows up with small amounts, of olives, then we got to question whether the she was pilfering or taking small portions that thousands of guys are not going to notice, and that should bring the debate to that. But so we're not going to allow that to. We're not going to say you know, I think you should avoid this. I think the proper word here should be bimuat instead of bimoed. Bimuat begalilayon shetamim adam boshim korah petach beitov v'notem nishtom acheret. So why can you take small amounts from the Galilayon? So Rashi says that in Galilayon there was not a lot of olive oil, and therefore olive oil was extremely expensive. So since it was extremely expensive, it's the equivalent of taking commercial quantities. For instance, makpid on every last piece of his oil. So if his wife is selling small pieces of oil out there, then or she's involved, then you know that she is, you know that her husband knows about it. And number two is, the reason that is because why? That either, it's one of two possibilities here. Either generally a person is embarrassed to be selling right outside his house, so he lets his wife do it. So he sends his wife out to do the selling because he's embarrassed to do it. Or the possibility is he's embarrassed because of the high prices that they were charging for the oil. Since the oil was in short supply, and they had to sell at a huge, they were selling at a huge premium, the guy was embarrassed to be out there selling, small amounts of oil for huge prices, so he sent his wife out to do it. But the fact that his wife's involved at all is, therefore, first of all, with his own knowledge, and number two, with something that was commonplace. So those two things make it that you can buy from his wife in the Galilee. Ravina equal to Bei Mechuza. Ravina went to the Bei Mechuza. After the shade the Bei Mechuza, Ramu Kamei Kadle. Right, so he went to the women of the Bei Mechuza came to him, and they gave to him. They provided to him Kadle, Vishayire. So Kadle, I assume that it probably has something to do with the word or the creature cable. But here, cable of Rashi says a Sharshurot Zahav, which are chains of zahav, right? The shayarei are tzvitim, are bracelets, right? So they gave them to Ravina when he came there. Kabum and I accepted them from them. I'm like Rabbo Tosva, the Ravina. So Rabbo Tosva says Ravina, Atanya, the right Tosva, the Kabum and Davar Muat, the Lo Davar Muva. You're taking these large ticket items from these women. That's not permitted. I can buy tzedakah. I can only take small ticket items from them. Says Amarei, Hani Levnei B'chuza, Dever Muadinu. We're talking about the B'nei B'chuza. These are rich people. For rich people, this is a small item. This is just, you know, for them, this is a sneeze. They don't worry about it. So it's subjective. You know, you can't just determine that big item, big price item, small price item. It's in the context of the wealth of that household. So if that wealth of the household is large, then what they consider as to be muat is different than what another household or a smaller household would consider to be muat. Mishnah, I'll do my best. I will explain it. I will do my best to describe it, but I have to admit that I have limitations in my knowledge of these areas or these these artisans that are these specialties. Mukin shakoves mutzi. So the small string that the koves takes out from the beged when he is washing the beged. Now we hear something about seems to be beged semer. We're talking about a woolen beged, so it sheds a little bit. The wooden woolen beged, when you wash it, right, gives off a little tufts, a little shedding. So that motzi ariel shalo. The koveit, the launderer, can keep these for himself, because that's the yisham's assumption. Assumption is that when he launders it, this type of stuff is going to come up. The baal habayis is not makpid on this, and he can keep them. On the other hand, about sereik, the word of the sereik is a fuller. Right, sereik comes from the word to lisrok, which is to comb, right, or to work. But it sounds like this is a person who cleans and shrinks wool. That's all I can say to you. Motzi, ari'ehu shalabala bayit. That which the sereik takes out, that belongs to the bayit, because he uses some sort of kutzim, sharp item, to take them out. And when he takes them out, we assume that these are significant or enough that we consider that the Baal HaBayit will consider it davar chashuv, and he's going to keep it, he's not mochel on it to the craftsman.
It's a lot more.
Right. I assume so. Koveit, notel gimachutin, behin shalob. The koveit can come, when he comes to wash the beged, he can take the last three rows of strings, or threads, and he keeps them. Yeter migan, or eilu shalobayit. More than that, it's because it belongs to the Baal HaBayit. The way Rashi explains it is derech orkei beged, semer. People normally, who wove the woolen garment, the end of the beged, it used to insert three additional threads of another thread of a different material, and that was used just to hold the beged tight until it was washed. And the assumption was, it's like the tags that you put on the new clothing. So when you cut off the tag, the assumption is that you send that to the cleaner, they cut the tag off, that you're not going to be much pleased that he cut the tag off of it. So it's over here, these were the three things that held there, but it was assumed that the Kohen would take them, and that's mutar for him to keep. Alright. If these additional strings or threads were black, and it was a white beged, no tela tako. You can remove all the black threads, because they make the beged look not so nice. The weaver or the tailor, if he leaves over enough thread in order to stitch with it, cut off a piece of garment that was 3 by 3 at the ba'od, those are considered significant and got returned to the balabais. Then he can keep it. Right? There's a mechila. What a carpenter takes off with a plane, right, with a filing plane, Ariel Shalom, he leaves them. Ubik Shiel is a large plane, a very large plane. So with that, so Balabite, that's really considered too significant. What you're shaving off with a large plane, that goes to the Balabite. You may also say it's a Balabite, he's working by the Balabite, meaning that he's a Tzchir Yom, Afan the Tzarim Shal Balabite. Even, or the real word probably should be Nitzoret, because the Tzarim, obviously the Tzarim belongs to the Balabite, but the Nitzoret, even the Tzodak, belongs to the Balabite, even the smallest amount belongs to the Balabite. Tanabanan, Luchim Mokim Minakuvet, Mipnei Shein Shalom. You can buy tufts of wool, or this, whatever this stuff that comes off the garment when he washes it, that he can take because they're his. A Kuvet, Notel Shmei Chutim Ayel Yonim, Shein Shalom. So I have to take the two upper threads, and they belong to him. Below, Yatil Bo Yoter Mishlosha Chuvim. Right, he's not allowed to place more than 3 stitches in a loop in order to stretch it out. So it seems to be, again, this is an area that I don't have expertise in it, but the lulaot, right, shaltevi, these lulaot that are used, these loops, right, that are used to hold the garment in order to be moteach, to stretch it out and pull it out when he is combing it or working on it, and there, he shouldn't do more of these 3 loops in order to, right, or shlosha chuvim, 3 stitches or 3 loops in order to stretch it out. Because otherwise it is too much for the beggar to handle, and it might cause damage or be negative towards his work over here. So whether these lula oats are literally in the beged itself in order to stretch it out, in order to give additional string for him to stretch out, or these are loops at the edge of the beged. I mean, that if they wanted to work on a beged, they used to hang it up on poles. So they used to put loops that allowed it to stretch across the poles so they could bang it, right? In their day, they didn't have a laundry machine. They used to use maklot to bang on it, to squeeze it out and to clear it out. So if they wanted moteach it, they used to have to hold it on something. So those things that they used to be moteach it, that they should only use 3 of these. When you actually comb the beged, or do whatever this avoda is, of the fuller, you should only do it agong the sheti, which is the warp, below the arvo, but not to the woof. Right? So, I mean, that directionally, right, it seems to be that it was more beneficial in one direction, except not the other. Umishavinu, when you even it out, when you stretch it out, larko, avoda larvo, you should do it lengthwise, not widthwise. Bimbada shavoto ad tefach rashan. If he says, if he needs to stretch it out, right, you're allowed to take from it, or you're allowed to, right, to trim it, or cut off from it, even out the tefach, as I say, remove a number of strings up to a tefach to make sure that it's fine. To make sure it's even and, all good. Amar Mark, shnei chutim, vanantan shlosh, right? This memra here that we just wrote down, this brisa, says that you're allowed to take the kumbit to take off shnei chutim. But our mission said he's allowed to take off 3 chutim. Mar says, well, gosh, I believe.
I have a question. What does it mean in Mashabehu Arko?
So when you stretch it out, you pull it lengthwise and not widthwise.
Okay.
Right. Now, banan tan shlosh. So when I said we did three, so when I said lotasha, abalime abaktine, depends on the size of the chutin. If it's thick chutin or big chutin, then you can only take two. If it's thin or narrow chutin, then you can only take three. You can take three. You shouldn't, again, comb the beggar along its warp strings, rather along its whoop strings. Then we have a price of the opposite. So my says, Lokash, Abigalima, Abisarvala. Depends if you're talking about a coat or a sarvala. So coat that's worn every single day, then if you want it to last longer, then you should do it, only the Arvo. Because that allows the beggar to last longer. It doesn't stretch it, it doesn't make it a thinner, so therefore you should, if you do that, it'll last longer. Habasarvalo is something that's worn on occasion. It's a fancy garment that you only wear on occasion. So fancier garments look better if you do it the shetio, even though they won't last as long. But since you don't wear them so often, the duration of the beged is less important to you than the look. And since the look is more important, you do it along the shetio because it looks better that way. Again, I don't really have a lot of habana on how this was or how why it works this way. Just explain the Gemara. That we shouldn't put on more than three loops or stitch loops in order to have it go to work on it. By Rav Yirmiya, am tuye v'atuye chad, uduma tuye v'atuye trei. When someone stitches in general, right, or when you put a stitch in, you always have to ask the question, when someone says one stitch, what does one stitch mean? Does one stitch mean just putting the needle through once and pulling the string? Or is the stitch, if you watch weavers work, weavers never just put the needle in once. They put the needle in two or three times and then they pull the string through. That's what he wants to know. Is it a single stitch, meaning you stuck the needle through and that's pulling it through? Or, amtuye v'atuye, meaning that he brought it up and down and then pulled the string through. So it would be a double stitch or two, an up and down. Or so the Marley says, teku. Mushaviyo l'orko, avolo l'orkbo. You can stretch it on lengthwise, but not to its widthwise. V'atanya yipchot, then we have an opposite, right? So, Lokash abglima habemune. Depends what you're talking about. With a glima, when it's talking about a jacket, then you have to pull it lengthwise. But when it's talking about a belt, where you're never going to tie the ends, right? The ends are left open because you have to fix the belt. Then you can pull, widthwise, because in the end the strings are going to be stuck out at that end anyway. Tana banan. In lochim and asurek muchin mifnei she'enu shalom. This goes against our Mishnah, right? And against the price that we just brought. That you can't buy from a sereik mukhin me'in shana shalo. U'makom shana gul yod shalo luchim. And then if it's a minhag, a makom, we give it to him. U'makom makom luchim me'in karmalei mukhin v'kesit m'liya mukhin. Then you can buy from them a pillow or a mattress that's full of this stuff. Then you can buy them. My time, kanenu b'shinuit. If he stole it, there's shina reshut here, so it's already his. So you can buy from it. Tana banan, in luchim mikardi, lo irin, v'lo nirin, v'lo punkilin. I'll do my best. You can't buy from a weaver lo irin, which are the Rashi says derekardi laniach semer bekanesh al arev kadesh shlo yisei arev min hakaneh. And a person when they tie up onto the kaneh the string, they used to pull it over the kaneh and tie it in order that it stays put. So that is belongs to the balabite. The gardi, the weaver, doesn't keep that.
Well, weaver. Again?
So I think that when they used to put up the, when they have to weave, they have to either, it seems to me that they have to, when they set up the loom, right, they have to pull the strings across the loom, you can't just have the strings on either end when they're doing the weaving, right, you can't just have the exact amount of string. If they extend the string over the end of the loom, and that string that is used to hold it or tie it to the loom, to make sure that it stays on, whether they wrap it around the bars and then knot it, or they knot it at the end so it can't come through the holes. Whatever it is, that excess string at the end, that does not belong to the weaver, that belongs to the Baal HaBayit. And he has to give it back to the Baal HaBayit when he's finished with it. Right? That's my understanding. Again, it's limited. Lo nirin, with nirin, which we've seen in the Gemara and Shabbos, it's batei nirin. If you, I don't know if you have any recollection of what the loom looks like, they lay out the strings, right, along the loom. And then they have these two big square things that lift the strings, the odd and even strings, up and down, so they can send the shuttle through the string. So those are the batei nirim. Those circles are the batei nirim. So those nirim, those strings that hold the batei nirim, those strings belong to the Baal HaBayit as well. All right, below punkelin, these punkelin, which I am very unclear what they are, but Rashi says, Jotin Liriot, and there are goats, Mi'umad. They're done for these tapestries that are done standing up when they're upright. They don't use a kaneh, they don't use some sort of post or something to hold them up, but they rather use these punklin, and I don't know, I saw somewhere weft or woof threads, I don't know what it is. The low shirei pikiot, that we can do. That the shirei pikiot are the bundles, or the, that maybe that's what's on the shuttle, that's wrapped around the shuttle, that's sent through, that the extra string that's on there, the leftovers of that belong to the Baal HaBayit. So you can't buy these from the weaver, because these all belong to the Baal HaBayit, and he's stealing if he has them. Begin minumar. You're allowed to buy from him a multicolored piece of clothing. Why? Because even though it's probably stolen, because why does he have a bunch of multicolored, why is he making multicolored bags? He has the leftovers from all the other bigadim that belong to the Baal HaBayit. But nevertheless, he's koneh b'shinui. He's koneh b'shinui, you can buy it from him. Right, because he made it into a bagad now, so it's fine. Erev v'sheti, you can buy from him Erev and Sheti, the wolf and the warp, right? And Tavi Bariga, that which is spun and that which is woven. Right, the Dimri Ashley Tavi Shakle, if you can buy spun string from him, then I rook me by it, then certainly you can buy woven. You can't have woven stuff without having the string be spun first. So my dad is Maya Reef. It's a case of tiki. So tiki is something that's found in other places, which is that they are not woven. They use the raw string without it being woven. And the word that was given is plaits, P-L-A-I-T-S. Right? But somehow it uses the string in a state where it's not woven. Okay? Not so clear on the mitzvot. You can't take from the dyer. Lo otot, lo dugmaot. Can't take from him samples that people brought to him for what they want to dye. And otot are test runs of the dye. Because both of those belong to the Baal HaBayit. For lo tushim shel tzemer, you can't buy from them pieces of wool, loose pieces of wool. Avalochim and beged tavua. You can take to them a full colored garment. Tavui. And also tavuyu begadim, that which is spun and clothing. I says hash the tavi shakiu. If you could take again, if you could take spun materials, then begadim mibayi. If something that is full clothing, my begadim namti. So that's the Gemara used all place when they try to get the namti. That is namti is felt, which is pressed. Stuff that is not woven, but rather pressed. Turan banana. Saying a rose labdan. Someone who gives skins to the tanner to work on. Hakitzayin, that which is when he cuts off the edges to make them straight. But kushim, the stuff that falls off it, aru elu shel Baal HaBayit. That all belongs to the Baal HaBayit, because they're part of the original skin that he gave him. And he's makpid on that, he wants it back. Ve'ole umishatef b'mayim, right, that which comes up or comes out when it's washed, aru elu shel, that belongs to the kopeit, because that seems to be more insignificant and probably more of a what we consider it to be waste, right? Unusable stuff, that belongs to the Mavdan. Meyeshachwar, if it was black, so now we said before that the Kovetz is allowed to take off anything that's black. So Meyuda Katsrishme, the name, what is the Aramaic word to describe a Kovetz, a launderer? Katsra. It's Katsra Shemei. His name is a Katsra. His craft is called Katsra. Because Katsra Shakilit. That's what he exactly does. He shortens the beged. Every time you give him a beged, you come back with what? Because he takes off strings from it. Those additional strings at the bottom of the beged, which is normal for the kovetz to take off, are they classified as part of the beged or not? So tchelet over here means for tzitzit. When you have tzitzit, you have to have the tzitzit, the knot that you're making be a tzba off the beged. From where do you measure the end of the beged? Right, so here, he says, Akol olim the minyan tzchelet. The way Rashi mentions it, where does it mean olim the minyan tzchelet? So Rashi says, Otan shlosha chutin, those three chutin that we discussed in the Mishnah, lo katsran, if he didn't take them off, right, Dakovesh, if the owner didn't take them off, Olin the midat malei kesher godel. They go towards the malei kesher godel. So tarifa achikat achelet shel tzitzit mitzvat beged. So it's not clear to me. I see both interpretations. Does that mean that ein olin min aminyan? Akol olin means that they count towards the beged. therefore you have to take an avodah off from the end of those three strings? Or does it mean they count ovin, right, to the godel, that they count, means the beged ends, and they're already part of the three strings, those three strings are insignificant, and therefore you already count the godel from before. Alright, so that's one of the questions. It says, Yitzhak Bray, Kapitalai. So Yitzhak Bray, his son was makpid on them. Either one interpretation, two possibilities, that it was either, it sounds like it was makpid and he took them out. But he was makpid and took them out because he felt that you should have counted from the end of those three strings. Or he felt that you shouldn't have had those three things count towards the godel, whichever the two interpretations are. He removed them to remove the suffix. Right. Achayat shishier et achut. But kamal itfor, we said before that if he has leftovers that are enough to stitch with, they go back to the balabayit. What does it mean litfor? Amar avasi malei chat, machat, chut, mamachat. It's the amount of a needle's worth plus beyond the needle's worth. So by the way, malei machat, v'chut, mamachat, kamalei machat. We say a needle's worth plus more, so it means a needle's worth plus an additional needle's worth. Why does that matter? Because a needle's worth is worthless. A needle's worth you can do nothing with, because that's the needle going through will take up the needle's worth. So in order to have something of significance, you need beyond a needle's worth in order to be something that people would use.
Once you pull a needle through a baguette, right, you have less than a needle's worth of good, you can't bend the needle back down to stick it back in.
There you go. That's the switch. Otherwise, it would be worthless in the stitching process. You couldn't make any use out of it. So, Odilma, Malay Machat, Machut, Machat, Mashus. Maybe it's a Machat Schwartz plus a dynamite extra. So, Tashma, Tanya, Kai, Shashir, Kachut, Pachot, Niktaili, Sport, Bo. Maybe less than he can stitch with. Umatlichi, Chuta, Mishlosh, Shalosh. Or a leftover, a piece of the garment that he cut up, it's less than 3x3, I suppose. Bismancho, Balabai, Makpita, Lan. There's a balabai to makpid on them, Erosho balabai, and the balabai gets them. Ein balabai to makpid on them, Erosho. So, Iyamar, Mashiklama, Malay Machat, Kukut, Machat, Kamalay Machat, if you say that if a needle's worth plus an additional needle's worth, then Pachot, Kukatan. When we say less than that, if the balabai is makpid, but the, if not, the Hayat gets it. If you say that it was a full needle's worth beyond the needle's worth, then you can say less than that has value. Right? But, Chazit a Sikhta. They can at least use it for a sikhta. What is a sikhta? Rashi says, chavin. Right? The same chavin that we said before, those loops that will allow us to hold the beged against the kaneh, that will be enough, that's enough to use it for that. So even though you can't make a full something out of it, it's enough to make these loops. So, Eliyamar Malay Machatu Chutzla Machat Mashu, if you say that it's only a machat worth plus a tiny bit afterwards, then Pachot Mikan is basically a machat worth, which is useless to my Kazi. It's obvious that when we say this four, it means two needles worth of tefira. Masha Harash Reminu. Masha Harash Motzi B'Ma'atzad. So whatever he takes off with a plane, V'Nifsak V'Megera, that which comes off with a saw, Arielu Shal Balabayit, they're going to Balabayit, which is against our Mishnah. V'Yotzei Mitzachat Makdeach, that which comes out from under, could call it probably a drill or a chisel, right? Umataka rehitni, or from under a rehitni. What is a rehitni? Is a klina, I should say, which is obviously a plane, but a larger plane. By nigrava megira, and that which is drawn out, the thin stuff that comes out with magira, arielu shalof, that stays with the carpenter. So Amarava, so obviously the difference between the ratio's price and the state of the price is how significant the item is. So, meaning that when we're talking about the matzad, a plane that's giving off stuff, right, then, right, it's bigger, then he keeps it. Right, nitzak megira, and the saw, that comes up, it seems to be splinters or pieces that come off with the saw, that belongs to the balabayit. Whereas when you're talking about the makdeach, or the drill, or the chisel bits, which are tiny, or the mitzak and the rehitni, which seems to be a sharper plane, right, nigra or megira, or that which is, right, the sawdust that comes off from the saw, that belongs to him. So Amarava Ba'atra, they still have a problem between our mission and the Brisa, but the Brisa says Matzah belongs to the Balabayit, and our mission says the Matzah belongs to the right, carpenter. So Amarava Ba'atra, the Tana Didan, the city in our Mishnah, Ikatarte Chasine. There are two different kinds of pain. The Rabati Karle Kshil, the big one they call Akshil, or the Zutrate, they call the Matzah, and the smaller plane they call the Matzah. Batch of the Tana Bairo, the author of the Braitha, Chadu the Ika, there's only one plane in the city, and they call it a Matzad. So then, the smaller plane, even the, whatever the size, it seems to be a large size plane, it's called the matzah, and that's why in the Braita it all goes to the balabait, because that's the large plane. The matzah is really done in a smaller plane, and that's why it goes to the carpenter. V'mayase itzlo, turn over on. Mistate avanim. Mistate avanim. Those are rock carvers, chiselers of rock. I don't think it's sculptors over here, but think people that actually chiselers. They straighten out the rock here. Ein b'hem mishum gezel. Then they don't have a dinim gezel from the leftover rock that they're chipping up. In fact, gay ilanot, people who prune trees for a living, they cut the excess branches off of the gifanim. Mefatke ilanot, those that do it for trees, those that do it for vines, menakfe hige, it's the same thing, just there's a different verb for it. By hige are, thorn bushes or low bushes. Menakfe zraim, those that are weeding out the, some of the things that are planted. Rodre yirakot, and those that remove excess vegetables that are squeezing out the other vegetables. Masha balabayit makpido lehem, mitzvah balabayit makpid, yesh ben mishum gezel. And they're from gezel. Ein balabayit makpido lehem, ariel shalot, and they belong to the worker. I'm reviewed that kashot v'chazit, hops and unripened, fodder in feed for the animals. Ein ben mishum gezel. They don't have gezel. Batra, the kapti, yesh ben mishum gezel. The place where they're makpid on it, and there is din of gezel. I'm ravina. Matamaxi after the cup deal. Matamaxi is a place that there must be on it. Rashi says the reason Matamaxi is a place. It says Makombe Hemos is a place where there are many animals, many herds, right? Behutzrihe and the Miratov, and they need good grazing land. So therefore, since they need good grazing stuff, they're not willing to give up even on these items that are not necessarily the main staple of an animal, but stuff that animals can still eat. So the Marsha has a nice thought over here. So in general, we end the Masech with a Gadot or a positive statement. Clear here that the Baba Kama does not end on that. Right? Doesn't end on that issue at all. But that's because, right, we said before, Kulei Nizike and Chadu. Right? All of Nizike is one Masechta, and therefore, Baba Kama, Baba Matim, Baba Matra are all one thing, and you only have to end Baba Matra on a good note, because that's the end of the Masechta, not here. But because they weren't so comfortable, the Marsha says that they were Merameis to a nice ending here. Because it says in Rashi, he says, look what Rashi says, Makom Beimos, who, Betrichim the Mir'eth. That's all Rashi has to say. The Tzichim Nemerah. Why is the Tzichim Nemerah? Who? You want to end up in a good note? And it says also here, how does it end off our Gemara over here? It says, Amaravino, Umata Maxia, Apta, Atra the Kaptehu. You take the last four letters of the, if you take the last four letters here, he says that it's, Yud Ke, right, the Vav and Aleph, that he says is Merame to the Shem Hashem. V'chein HaTamud, Badar the Tziyem, the Kadit Tiyim Bodios Yud K Yud Hey and Vovav Hamorel Shmutav Habaya Shem Shel Dalit Ve Yud K Veye Asher Imanu Galut Vato Bodios Zukot Mimenu. So he says that it's Mare on the different Shemot of Hashem, right? The Yud and the Shem Ka, the Shem Eke, and the Shem Habaya. Right, we'll stop there.
Sure.